Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
State player at 720 WGN, welcome in and glad you could be with us. 312-981-7200 is where you can call or text. Now, to me, that theme is synonymous with two Chicago TV legends. The iconic duo of Bill Curtis and Walter Jacobson both started at WBBM-TV in the 1960s, but it wasn't until 1973, 50 years ago this year, when the two reporters were teamed up to become lead co-anchors. And for the next 9 years, their newscast became the number one rated news in Chicago. Not only was WBBM's The 10 O'Clock News tops in the ratings locally, but it became the blueprint for newscasts around the country. Now, today you can catch Bill on the Cold Case Files on A&E and behind the scenes producing a new season of American Greed on CNBC. Walter's perspectives can be heard every Thursday on the John Williams Show here on WGN Radio. And to celebrate this milestone anniversary, Bill and Walter join me in studio. Welcome in, gentlemen.
Nice Same to you, David.
Thank you, David.
So nice to have us here.
Oh, it's great to see you both together. Well, it was 5 decades ago since you both were paired together on what was the most successful local evening news broadcast in television history. It must feel pretty cool.
It does. I wish we could start it all over again.
It's something we wanted to do after we stopped to do it again. And we did that. You know, we came back to WBBM just to try it out for a couple of days.
You know, that night, that Friday night that you came back to fill in for Rob Johnson, I was a big dork, and I literally stayed home that night. I didn't even want to DVR it. I wanted to see it live, seeing you two behind the anchor desk again. That's how iconic you guys are.
Well, and it was fun. That had not changed. I mean, Walter and I slipped right in from the first word, just like we had been. But everything else had changed.
Yeah, I bet.
And so after the 2 years, I think you would go back to work then because you really enjoyed it. I'd probably go on.
I mean, nobody could even touch you guys. And even as a kid, I knew how big this broadcast was. And I know you both started working at BBM in the 1960s, but you both came from very different backgrounds. Bill, at 16, you began as an announcer on KIND in Independence, Kansas.
It's the classic story, 250 watts, a little town of 10,000 people. It's the only radio station in town and probably the best experience I've ever had.
And at such a young age, what drove you into broadcasting at 16 years old?
A deep voice.
A deep voice. So you had that legendary voice back then.
Knew it then. Now, that's something I didn't know about. You were aware of a deep voice back then.
Yeah, even then. And I thought, I think I can slip into this, and I would like to do it. And I think I did for about 3 years before going to college.
Maybe that's what had something to do with how we worked so well together.
That may be.
Because we were just so totally different.
Yeah, that's
I always considered myself a very squeaky voice. And when people stop me on the street and say, I remember you, and I remember your voice, I say, no, you remember those stentorian tones that came from Bill Curtis. I didn't belong in the business.
Oh, no, not at all. But I mean, but again, so different backgrounds. And did you know that that voice was powerful enough for radio, or did someone say to you, Bill, you know, you should really consider this?
Well, both. But I kind of knew it. And what I will claim is that from that early, because this is a good lesson for young people, from that early time, I had a vision. And the vision was to stay in broadcasting, may have been television, radio, the variety of jobs that were there, but this was it. Now, I also felt through high school and some college that it wasn't serious enough. It came so easy that maybe I needed something else. So I went on to law school.
You did. You did. I was going to say, your degree in journalism, your law degree, and then you went to Topeka, and you were on the air for over 24 hours covering a tornado there.
It is considered in Topeka and Kansas my big break.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And I guess it was, because after that, and being the only television station in town, 70% of the television audience was watching us, and I happened to be the guy on the air. There was a great team, you know, local beyond local, but really part of the community. And as a matter of fact, a year ago, why they held a sort of a memorial service and asked me to come back.
Oh, that's cool.
To say thanks. 700 people showed up.
Wow.
Everybody who had had that experience. But in 3 months, I had sent my tapes out, and John Madigan from WBBM-TV hired me right into the newsroom as a reporter.
How exciting was that for you?
Well, it was a big city.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was married, had a six-month-old. And so I had to get used to the city coming from.
Sure.
I mean, the capital of the state was 150,000. So Chicago was really something. But I was ready to learn. And, you know, you wrote. There was a structure that you slipped into. We were using film and. I had not worked that much with film and processing and editing and unions.
It's a lot to learn right off the bat.
A lot, yep.
Yeah. Now, Walter, you were born here in Chicago, and your journey to the newsroom started as a bat boy for the Chicago Cubs, right?
Hardly got me into a newsroom, but that's what's remembered about me.
That is.
Curtis in a tornado, Walter in the dugout.
In the dugout, I like that. And you went on to get your degree in political science, a master's in journalism. Pretty deadly combination for you, because, I mean, that set the pace.
I never really knew much or cared much about the techniques of television. I was kind of the reporter with a pencil and a pad and just focused on that. I'm still very weak in that regard. I don't know these latest developments. That was his expertise. So I was very interested in hearing you just say that, Bill, that you got into this at that television and radio level. I got into it on the wire services and the City News Bureau.
Yeah, the City News Bureau was your big break.
Right, and a couple of Chicago newspapers. I was just reporting.
Yeah.
I was not performing and didn't know much about performing. I would try to discourage the two guys who came in from New York to hire us or to put together a whole new show. I told them, you know, this isn't my bag. They kind of liked my combativeness.
Yeah.
They were smart enough. The history of two major players at CBS in New York sent to Chicago to dig the CBS local station, Channel 2, out of the depths. And somehow they got this idea to put together two very different guys and didn't expect it to work. It was a gamble because the CBS ratings were just so bad, anything might make them better.
But you were reporting at the time. Were you doing perspectives before you were anchoring? Were you going on the air already, or were you more behind the scenes?
Oh, all behind the scenes.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, I was on-camera reporter,
yeah,
but I was
yeah.
a city hall reporter. So
sure.
I stood in front of the mayor's office when he held a news conference, and when he finished, then I put on my kind of smart-ass attitude and said, you know, this is what he said, but here's what he really meant.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is good for young people, too. He had mentors, Jack Mabley.
Jack Mabley,
did
yeah.
you work for Royco? Were you a leg man for Royco, Mike Royco?
Yeah, what about him? I worked with him.
Yeah, with him.
I was on the Chicago's American. He was on the Daily News, but we were assigned to the same beat
yep.
at the Cook County office building.
And City News. So he was really in the news-gathering part, the core of journalism in the city.
And you, I mean, you had an investigative mind. That's what drove you.
Yeah.
I mean,
curious. Every reporter needs to be that. But it developed. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were together 9 years, and during that time, there was a growth into number one. It didn't come overnight.
Oh, it sure didn't.
You know, it was, a year and a half. I even counted 3 years, but I think it was probably
Let
a year
me
and
correct
a half.
You. I remember this for sure. It was 5 years, and CBS had finally said, we've had enough of these two guys. They're not making it. We're going to end it. For some reason, they lasted another 6 or 8 months, and in that time, we just took off.
Wow.
It had quite a bit to do with what was going on in Chicago at the time, too, the politics and the crime, those kinds of stories. But
what wooed you back to the station? Because you left for a little bit. You went to MAQ for a couple years, didn't you?
the memory factor at being this age really gets in the way of things. I'm having trouble sometimes remembering exactly what happened to us during that time. But I do know that we were trying very hard to be more serious.
Well, we are talking to TV legends Bill Curtis and Walter Jacobson, and there's more with them next on 720 WGN. Dave Plyer, 720 WGN. We're talking to Bill Curtis and Walter Jacobson on the 50th anniversary of being paired together on the 10 o'clock news. So did you both think your pairing back in 1973 was going to work, given how different you both were? Or did you think out of the box that you would complement each other?
Let's reveal something here. You were much less confident than I was, and I was not confident at all that it would work, because you saw me as a troublemaker, a big city guy who wouldn't keep his nose out of government and politics, whereas he was a rural.
Exactly.
Fair to call you rural?
Absolutely,
yeah.
From Kansas.
Everything was very just straight.
Except
black
the
and
establishment.
White.
And look at the time.
I must have driven you crazy.
Crazy.
when you would read a story and I was sitting next to you and I'd make some remark about it, I could just see him going, oh, my God, Walter, stop it.
No, I learned how to be a good husband, which is to listen but not
That's
intrude.
A smart move. I like that.
It turned out to be the perfect combination.
It absolutely
He was the
did.
Inside guy. I was the outside guy. I came from 3 years with CBS News as a correspondent, so I like to travel and be on the street all the time. And I would come in sort of like, honey, I'm home, in the evening, ready to do my thing. And Walter had been working at home. And working all day on a perspective.
Sure.
And you put those things together, and it was fresh. And our conversations were fresh. You do your thing, I did mine. So it turned out to be this genius chemistry.
Yeah.
When something works, everybody's a genius. So the general manager, Bob Wessler, Van Gordon Sauter, the news director, took it, and they deserve credit. And all of a sudden, we're hot.
You are hot.
They had trouble with me in the beginning because CBS had a very firm policy that anchors are not to be commentators.
And that's who you were.
The wall was between them.
Yeah.
And I had gone over to...
Way beyond.
I was fired by Channel 2 for being too controversial, and I went to Channel 5. And then I came back when we came back together. That was in 1973.
Right.
But I would not come unless I were able to continue my commentary.
So I was going to ask that. So that's what wooed you back, is you got to have that creative control over your...
Well, I knew about his reputation. He was on his way to major CBS things, and I was very, interested in being with him. And I wanted to do what I wanted to do the best, which was the commentary, much better than reading the news as an anchor. And I said I just couldn't come. I couldn't leave Channel 5 in order to come back here to just be anchor. I said, you'd make a bad mistake. This is a very, very conservative in many ways town. This is an Irish Catholic town. Mm-hmm. All those anchors from John Drury on down. What are you going to do with this little Jewish kid who doesn't belong?
Yeah.
And you tell us now, you must have felt, this is a mistake.
Well,
you didn't come here thinking that we were going
right.
We were not going to be co-anchors.
Yeah.
I was going to do the commentary and you were going to do the anchoring.
Yeah.
They decided I should do the anchoring too, I don't know. Do you?
No, I don't.
But it was brilliant.
You were ready to turn around and go back to California.
Well, that would have been a big leap. But I thought about that. I really did. It was a little bait and switch, is what it was.
Sure.
But they got over the problems with Walter's opinion by labeling it. This is an opinion.
Yeah.
And
telling people directly
that
this was supposed to. This wasn't.
And then what was different is that he was able to anchor with me for the rest of the newscast. That was a breakthrough.
It was a breakthrough. Who preceded you both?
I actually left the anchor set and came back to the newsroom in time to do the commentary, took off my jacket, at which time I had
more casual. Yes, you did.
And I did the commentary, and then went directly to a commercial. That's very interesting today. There's no line, no wall between commentary and news. And
that's true.
I think that's just terrible.
And that's a growing trend. We are going to talk about that. Who preceded you both on the 10 o'clock news? We were listening to some promos before we get started.
He was Bob McBride.
Okay.
But before that, you remember Fahey Flynn.
Oh, of course.
And they were grooming John Drury, who, in my estimation, was the world's best anchor man because he's tall. He was tall, dark, and handsome.
Right.
He had a great voice. Great presence
and
on the
likeable.
Air. Yeah.
So likeable.
But he was so fed up with the news director at Channel 2, he left and he went to WGN and stayed there until he then went on to Channel 7.
Right.
But beyond that, you remember P.J. Hoff?
Oh, yes. And,
but Fahey was an era, and he ruled the roost in Chicago.
Well, there's more with Bill and Walter after the news next on 720 WGN. Dave Plyer on 720 WGN. We're talking to the legendary news team of Walter Jacobson and Bill Curtis. This is also a time that we have to remember there was a handful of channels, so no cable, no satellite, no streaming. And more than half the city was sitting down at 10 o'clock and watching your newscast every single night.
That's another reason that we could be number one with 1 million people or 2 million sometimes.
Yeah.
And they would turn over, switch from other stations. Now, one of the most satisfying things I have are young people who, you know, have children of their own who come just sort of transfixed and they say, I grew up with you.
Right? Yeah, I did.
I grew up with you, and it's very meaningful. I don't know how
when I'm stopped on the subway or the street by recognition, I say, you know, how can you recognize me? I don't look the same.
You do.
I said, you know, you must have been 5 years old in the living room when Mom and Dad were telling you to watch because they like watching us. And they all say, yeah, that's what happened.
Uh-huh.
Well, let me tell you, I was born in 67. So I was a kid watching the 10, because my parents watched the 10 o'clock news. I mean, that was out of my grandparents' house. That was in my other grandparents' house. And there was a time, and I've shared this personal story with you guys separately, but I was 11, very interested in the broadcast world, and a friend of the family was a WBBM cameraman, Noel Ludwig was his name. And he said, do you want to come down to the station and watch the 10 o'clock news? And I thought, oh my gosh, yeah, of course I'd love to go down there. So 11 years old, I think it was like 1978, which was really when you said you really took off. And got there about 8:30 and saw you guys kind of walking around, getting your stories together, talking to, you know, other people in the newsroom, getting everything ready. And then the cameras went on, and I was in awe watching you two because, I mean, I grew up watching you. And then afterwards got to shake both your hands and say hello, and then got some pictures at the anchor desk. I got to go see John Coughlin and go stand in front of the weather map and so forth. And then the coolest thing was I got to go sit very seriously in Walter's chair in his perspectives office and give that look.
Yes.
Like I was going to tell them something, a piece of my mind. And that was the coolest thing. And I still have those pictures. And that was one of the coolest experiences of my life. So, yeah, I'm another one from a generation, a younger generation, that grew up with the both of you.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I got my news.
Yeah. That's why we're here today.
That's why you're here today. Exactly.
And who knows what's next?
That's right. Was the popularity of the newscast ever distracting to you when you try to do your job, you know, or have some peace in your personal lives? You know, you said getting recognized on the street and so forth. Was that a little tough? Because, I mean, you were number one.
No, to be honest, it was not tough. It was enjoyable. I mean, that's some of the fruits of that labor.
Sure.
And too many people who do what we did or do beg off that. Oh, no, I don't like that publicity. I want my privacy. Come on. That's just ridiculous. That's a signal of your success. If people want to stop and talk to you,
so true.
Do it.
So true.
You know, Fahey would use sort of it as an excuse. Well, you know, people come up and I change the story if I go on. I found that you could leverage it.
Right.
A newspaper reporter was with a gaggle outside a home where there had been a homicide or something like that. Everybody wanted the interview with the person inside. I walked up. And because I had been on television, they recognized me, invited me in, left everybody else outside. He said, we're done.
Well, that's the power.
That's it.
And that's the power of that show. It was an incredible experience, you know, watching you guys on there. Did you actually, were you asked to run for mayor at some point against Mayor Daley, Walter?
Well, it depends on who you mean by asked. Dan Walker was governor at the time, and his right-hand man, Vic DeGrazia was his name, kind of had this idea that why don't we try that? And I why not? You know, and they made up some buttons that said Jake for mayor or whatever.
Is that right?
But it was not serious. We never got around to petitions or anything.
But that's how powerful your perspectives were.
Yeah.
They made an impact on the city.
And exposure. The state.
And exposure, yeah.
And why is that not being done now? That's a very important part of television news. And there's no station in town that's doing that.
Not really.
Especially in a town like this where people are really interested. Politics is the second biggest game in this town, for sure, after sports.
And what it has done, along with other things, is it's removed a kind of an artery that connected the newscast, newsroom with the people in the community, because suddenly Walter was talking about issues that affected them, and they felt he stood up for them. Without that, you know.
So what's happened? Why in the years since we were doing this have the stations looked down on the idea of commentary? I think I was the last one, I think.
Well, sometimes commentary from a national perspective is forced on station groups. I mean, I'm sure you've read a lot about that. But, I mean, this station here obviously values those perspectives, because when I play it during my show, I kind of have to stop and stand at attention, because I know you've got something extremely important to say, and I still think that's how listeners view that as well.
But where does the pressure come on the station management to not have commentary?
I think a part of it's political correctness too, that they're afraid of the pushback they might get from listeners that don't agree.
And they're afraid of just the controversy.
Yeah, right.
Because you may turn off 50% and 50% like you, and you send advertisers perhaps, but you know.
But it's always that way. I mean,
yes, and there's a balance.
Yeah.
If you have, you know, you listen to the perspective, then you go into the rest of the newscast that is right down the middle, everybody's happy.
I don't know the actual numbers, but we have what's called the Q rating.
Yeah.
Whoever does the Q rating is determine which anchors are the most popular, the most liked. And he was way up at the top, and I was way at the bottom. But they watched.
But as a team, they watched. Walter drove his commentaries in politics, but Bill, it was all about investigative journalism for you. And that has something that has always been the fabric of your being, and it has been for decades after that time period.
If I look back on a career, why, that period, probably 3 or 4 years toward the end of the 60s, was one, the most exciting, but also the most productive for me. One, you had the Democratic National Convention. Everybody's now doing the revisits to 1968.
Sure.
We were on the street at the time. And anyway, you know the history there. Yeah. But I was able, with a unit, which was one of the first investigative units for a television station, to break Agent Orange, a story that is still going on, 200,000 veterans compensated, 50 diseases recognized as being connected with this defoliant, discovered Amerasian children as one of the first, if not the first, American back in Vietnam. And then kind of from there, just sticking with good old coverage and looking. Richard Speck would be another big story.
Sure, of course.
You know, we all have productive periods in our life. That was one. And one reason we were able to do it is because management gave us their confidence and said, go ahead.
Yeah.
And did not have a heavy hand, but allowed us to do our thing.
Well, you can catch Bill Curtis on Cold Case Files on A&E and AETV.com. A new season of American Greed is on Tuesdays at 9 on CNBC, and Walter's perspective can be heard on The John Williams Show every Thursday right here on WGN Radio. Congratulations, guys, on your 50th anniversary, and it's always an honor spending time with you both.
Thank you, David.
All right, thank you, and we'll be right back after this on 720 WGN.